please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. This week we are live from the East Coast of the United States. I'm your host, Brett King. I guess you know that already. Otherwise, you probably haven't listened to the show before. But anyway, we've got tons of guests for you today. It's going to be very, very busy. So let's just jump straight into it. Don't forget, we've got coming up over the next few weeks, we've got a big event coming up, which is Finovate May. I guess some of you guys will be there. I hope to catch you there in San Jose. That's May 10th and 11th. You're going to be 70 companies there, startups and others, vying for best of show at Finovate, 7-minute demos on stage, and as I said, Movin's going to be there. If you're interested in coming to Finovate, go to spring2016.finovate.com to register and use our discount code BREAKINGBANKS20 to get a 20% discount on the price. And don't also forget, just after Finovate, exactly the day after Finovate in Silicon Valley, Next Bank USA is going to be on there, and JP Nichols, our good friend, is going to be hosting that together. So a lot of big things happening. Okay, now just some quick news before we jump into it, and we've got Dave Birch is going to do a wrap up on Money 2020 for us in a moment. But before we get to that, just some quick news. Obviously, the big news of the week is Alipay expanding into Europe. That's pretty huge. I just have in my mind, for some reason, this thing where Alipay and UnionPay merge and become like the biggest payments entity in the world. You know, I mean, I don't know, probably Alipay probably is already the biggest payment entity in the world. MasterCard and Visa might have something to say about that. I don't know. The other news, of course, is Citi has announced they're going to be using HoloLens for virtual reality trading. This is, as far as I know, the first application of HoloLens in the trading space. And there was also an interesting report from Down Under, from Frost and Sullivan, that said the Aussie banks could possibly lose $13 billion in revenue to the fintech sector. So this is pretty interesting. Now, during the week, I saw this tweet out from Richard Hunt, who was at Retail Banking 2016 here in the US, saying that he thinks 90% of fintechs won't make it. But you know, maybe it might be the other way around. Maybe 50% of banks might not make it with this fintech revolution. We're going to talk more about that as we get into the show today. We have a great selection of guests. We're going to talk about fintech in Switzerland and some other locations. But before we get to that, let's hear a brief pre-recorded interview that Dave Birch set up from Money 2020. He wanted to be on the show, but he's just got off a flight and just landed, and it's a bit noisy where he is, so he sent this pre-recorded. So, Matt, can you roll the tape from Dave Birch?
So it's Dave Birch here from Consult Hyperion with
Christine Duhane from the Digital Finance Institute. Hello.
And we've just walked out of Money 2020, and I thought it would be just fun to capture our thoughts about it while it's still fresh in our head and share it with people. You okay with this?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's get the bad things out of the way first. If we say the whole thing was absolutely fantastic, which actually it was
pretty fantastic,
we won't sound credible. So I think we need to just, there were one or two things that didn't work quite right, like the app crashed.
Yes.
A few times. That was quite annoying. I mean, there were some exceptional speakers, but there were one or two that fell a little bit flat. So I think it was patchy in places on the speaking program.
I'd agree.
My biggest complaint was that on the final morning, the speaking sessions were still running on the final morning in the main hall, but the exhibition centre had closed down.
Yes.
And so consequently, the speaking lounge had closed with it, which is where a lot of people had been meeting. So on the final morning, it was a little bit inconvenient, I thought. I hope they change that next year. Right, so let's get all that out of the way now.
Okay.
And so what did you like about it?
But it's very well organized. Money 2020 took a lot of time and attention to make sure that the speakers were well looked after, that the audience was well looked after from start to finish in terms of food, coffee, exhibit space, answering your questions. They were very friendly. Like, they did a really professional, amazing job the whole way.
And I have to say, I loved the venue.
Yes,
because I thought having all the track rooms next to each other, next to the speaker's lounge, that was very effective. And the other thing I really liked was I liked the way they had that kind of central atrium.
Yes.
Where everybody was mingling and walking through. Because you were walking backwards and forwards 10 times a day through that.
Exactly.
And that meant everybody met everybody. And so I really loved the way that was all set
social.
Up.
Very social.
If we think about the content for a couple of minutes, if we're going to try and pick out one or two, I know you're going to say I'm biased because I got to run the Rockstar blockchain panel with R3 and Barclays and UBS. And I thought blockchain was a strong theme of the conference. But what did you see?
I saw blockchain as well as a strong theme of the conference. And obviously, I think banks realizing that it isn't just a sideline thing they need to be aware of, but I think actually becoming much more engaged in the dialogue about how it could apply to their business. The other thing I noticed as a big theme is a whole digital identity. What would that look like? Where are we going? What we know, how will that intersect with banks and the fintechs with banks on that issue? So those two themes for me stood out.
I think the identity stuff, I mean, obviously I'm biased because I look for that identity stuff, but I could see that as a growing part of what was going on.
Absolutely. You talked a little bit earlier about RegTech possibly not having enough of an emphasis, because I heard from people on the floor that they were wishing that there had been a section more on the law as regulators are coming. So I think there was a feeling there needed to be some more meat on that particular topic.
Yeah, I think RegTech was kind of emerging as a distinct theme, wasn't
it?
I mean, we've heard it before, but it was much stronger.
Absolutely.
This year. There was quite a lot of discussion about inclusion, which I think was an interesting thing.
Yeah, we did a panel on that,
There was much less discussion about card payments, which I think is a message by itself, isn't it?
Yes. So
it's not the focus of people's interest or excitement. A lot of stuff about mobile, of course, as you'd expect, very strong in these kind of areas. Did anything catch your eye going around the exhibition?
Alipay, obviously well attended, lots of people there to talk to about what they're doing, and of course they're also innovative and, you know, everyone's watching what they're doing. So
She gave the best talk of the whole conference. The woman from Alipay talking about their new app, and she had the most memorable. Like, she stood up and she said, "We're not trying to give our clients more payment systems. We're trying to give them more customers." And I thought that was a great line.
Yep.
Now, of course, my understanding of the conference depends very heavily on what I saw going past on Twitter.
Yes.
which included some very fun times at the party on Tuesday night.
Yes.
But I couldn't help but notice that one of the most tweeted and retweeted parts of the conference was the FemTech panel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious to ask, because I've got you here, like, what was it about that panel that got so much attention?
I think it came together really nicely. The panelists did an amazing job. A lot of leadership on the panel. They were very honest. It was very engaging with the audience as well. Lots of Q&A. And two women came up and said that they thought we were very inspiring, which I think is the most you can ask.
Just to finish up, so people prepare, the comparison I heard a lot of people make was with Sibos.
Yes.
And a common complaint about Sibos, or at least last year, it's become a little sort of disjointed and unfocused and whatever. You've been to both. How do you see this stacking up against Sibos?
I think that's a fair comparison. Sibos was unwieldy in a lot of ways, many breakouts, some of which weren't well attended. I think too much going on. Whereas this was a conference that focused on customer service as an attendee, and it helped you all along the way to enjoy the experience a lot better.
That's great. I guess the proof of the pudding, I'm definitely going to go again next year. How about you?
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Well, that's great. Thanks, Dave. I think, Rachel, we just found our new correspondent. Whenever we have Dave on the show, you know, he does these really long answers and talks a lot. He's listening right now to this, so I'm going to get in trouble. But he's a really good interviewer. You can tell from all those years of him running the podcast. So thanks, Dave. That was excellent. You know, I think also Dave is too modest to mention, but The Rockstar blockchain panel was actually one of the highest rated sessions at Money 2020. And certainly in terms of tweet activity, it was right up there. The Alipay, yeah, sure, it must have been a good session. But Dave, don't sell yourself short, man. I think your panel in terms of Twitter activity was right up there. Okay, now this coming up next. Let's introduce to you guys John Hucker and Alexandra Gellard. Have I got that right, Alexandra?
Yeah, that's right.
Great. So John Hucker is the president of the Swiss Financial and Technology Association. Alexandra is the CEO of InvestGlass, and we thought we'd get these guys on to talk about the fact that just in the last couple of weeks we've had announced that Switzerland is going to make a play as a center of fintech excellence in the European Union. So first of all, let me ask you guys about the you guys are both involved in this Swiss Finance and Technology Association, I understand.
Yeah, hi, Brett. John here. Exactly right. So Alex and I are actually two of the co-founders of the association. It's been around for about a year now, but traces its roots back to meetup groups that we each founded about 2 years ago in Zurich and Geneva. As you can tell by the French name, Alex is in Geneva, and I've been in Zurich for quite a while now. Really the quick history of it and why it connects to what you just mentioned about Switzerland appearing on the scene. What I really saw, I worked for Credit Suisse for the last 5 years, and I could see that the banks there were really struggling to wake up to the change that was going to be coming to them, or was already there, really. And that has a lot to do with the legacy of banking secrecy and the tradition that had really been in the industry for decades. And after the crisis, really started to see that unravel pretty quickly. And people were so busy dealing with reactive change, they didn't see the opportunity for innovation and fintech that was starting to just take off in the U.S. and the U.K. My belief really was, you had a real need and a real opportunity to change. And so I kind of stuck my neck out there and said, there's nothing happening in terms of a fintech community. Nobody's talking about this. Let's get started and see if we can help get things ready for the future.
Now, in the UK, John, there's been a very strong support, from the Chancellor down at the government level, embracing the whole fintech thing. I don't know whether you're aware, but we actually had Boris Johnson on the radio show last year as well. It might have been the year before, talking about fintech. And I mean, to have that level of involvement, in New York, you don't hear de Blasio talking about fintech. So what sort of support are you getting at that level in Switzerland?
It's getting better. I mean, what I have to say right off the bat is Switzerland is not the UK. For a number of different reasons. But one of the things I think is funny, I've lived in a few different parts of the world. I'm a British passport holder. There's different cultures, and the UK definitely still has a mindset of being, an empire. And there's a lot of top-down support when they want to get something done. You see all the big hitters come out and support it. And Switzerland has a much different type of culture. It's much more modest. It's much more democratic, and it's much more bottom-up in terms of how things develop. And for a long time, actually, I was told, don't expect the government to get involved. It's not the way that things happen here. So that's the way we started and why our association is very bottom-up. It's about the people, and that's the way we've been really having our success. But really, in the last year, things exploded. But in the last 6 months, you've really seen that it's gotten on the radar of politicians. So nothing like the president sticking their nose out and saying that this is something we'll support. But you do see the mayor of Zurich, for example, taking a large interest. I'm sure Alex can tell you more about it, but Sibos will be in Geneva later this year, and a lot of government support was needed to make that happen, and we'll be there to help make it a great thing.
Yeah, Geneva, yeah. Well, yeah. That's a big deal. And, we should try and do the show live from there when we're there. In Cyprus this year.
Oh, Brett, you're most welcome, and I'll bring you to the best Swiss cheese fondue places in Geneva.
Awesome. So, Alexander, tell us about InvestGlass. What's that?
Sure. Well, I'm an ex-banker, so for many years I struggled to deliver the right financial information to the right investor in the right time, and I thought that this was actually the core of our new added value with the storytelling we could bring into investment cases. And everything started because I couldn't find the right platform. So 2 years ago, I started my company as my employee left me, more than I left my employee, my ex-employer, I'm sorry. And now InvestGlass, it's a platform which helps IFAs and banks to produce convincing and compliant investment proposals. We'll call this a robo-advisor, but it's more like artificial intelligence with a persuasion factor.
So here's a question for both of you guys is, you know, I know the Swiss are very proud of their banking heritage as a town and their competency. Swiss bankers have always been considered, a step above other bankers, for various reasons. But when it comes to fintech, do you think there was sort of a collective denial of the impact that fintech was having globally initially?
Yeah, I'll take the first stab at that.
No,
Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to imagine the Swiss culture compared to the English one, I think, or the U.S., I think U.S. is you shoot first and you think after. The U.K., you talk first and then you think. And I would say in the Switzerland, it's more, well, you prefer to do it right first instead of rushing to do it. And we've been quite impressed by the reactivity in the last 6 months of Finma, Mark Branson, and Noel Bieri, who have been very, very reacting and reactive to what's going on to make sure that Switzerland will keep a good place in the new fintech world. So I think it's just a matter of time. Also, you have to understand that the market was a market where we were not used to be very communicative. So with the new mindset of ecosystem, open sandboxes, APIs, this is just a revolution in the way systems and data are flowing all around. And the behaviors also of the clients change a lot. It's a real change in the mindset. But the Swiss banks now are very, very aware of that, and they are ready to embrace the change.
So let me just ask you guys, what do you think? What do you estimate as the total investment in fintech in Switzerland to date?
That's a tough one. We've seen some figures and some data that suggest it's around 50 to 100 million francs a year. But one of the unique things about Switzerland is it doesn't have this venture capital type of culture that you see in places like the UK, well, and definitely in the US. You see an awful lot of investments that happen behind the scenes. And touching on what Alex said, what you really see is a lot of bootstrapping. It's not the kind of place where you can come ahead in a great team and have a business plan and raise lots of money. You really have to go out and build something, sell it, and when you have traction, that's really what brings on more money. So you don't see that same sort of big wave of investment that you do in other locations.
Listen, guys, we need to just take a quick break. So let's continue this after the break. I want to ask you specifically about InvestGlass's plans and what maybe about the brain drain potential of this. So let's do that after the break. Just before we head to the break, a quick shout out to Temenos and thanking them for their continued sponsorship. Temenos and Anthemis just released their white paper challenging the notion of the low balance sheet for businesses like Airbnb and Uber. So check that out. And we'll be right back after this quick break. Hi, it's Brett King here. I wanted to reach out to you personally to let you know about my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out the first week of May. I'm so excited about this book. It's going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, through your local bookstore. But this book has taken 2 years of my life. Thousands of hours of research have gone behind it. We've got some amazing contributions from the likes of Alex Lightman, Andy Lark from Xero, JP Rangaswamy from Deutsche Bank and Salesforce. We have interviews with Ramez Naam, an award-winning sci-fi author, roboticist Elliot Mack, Dr. Giovanni Santostasi on The Activated Self, Dr. Hugh Herr from MIT, Brad Templeton on the Google self-driving car. Listen, if you enjoyed my podcast, you're excited about the future and the opportunities it presents, then Augmented is going to be a book you're really going to enjoy. Robert Scoble, the West Coast commentator on technology, he said, we're in the midst of a huge wave of technological change, augmented reality, self-driving cars, human-like robots. Brett King not just properly catalogues all of these things, but he tells us what it all means, that soon we will be augmented. His look at what's happening will be my Bible for a long time. Check out augmentedbook.com or go to Amazon and pre-order it. I'd really appreciate your support.
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Okay, so I've got a question for you guys out there. What is the most successful product in history? And let's take it by product launch. What is the most successful product launch ever in history?
I got one.
Yeah, Alex?
I would
Alex
say
Lightman, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I would say it's the Osborne 1 computer because it was the very first product to get $100 million for a startup in the first year in the history of the world.
That's not a bad one. That's not a bad one.
Yeah, well, you said launch. You didn't say sustainable.
Okay. So here's the thing: I'm leading to this. Is Tesla sold in less than a week? They did pre-orders for 365,000 Model 3 EVs, which is a disaster for them if they can't build them. You're right.
And they know they can't build them because they don't have the factory, and they bought their last factory, which cost $1 billion to NUMMI, right, to Toyota and GM. They bought it for $30 million. They can't keep doing that. That's not scalable.
Yeah, exactly. $14 billion of pre-orders. Now, the big question is, how are they going to ramp up and do this? So, Alex, we might talk about that when we get into – I still want to focus on health tech, though, because that's the stuff that I think is going to be really interesting for the second half of the show. But for those of you just joining us, we have John Hucker on from where are you calling from again, John? In New York, right?
Yeah, I'm here in New York this week.
Yeah. So, and then we've got Alexander Gellard from InvestGlass. He's calling from Copenhagen, where he just finished out at Money 2020. Harriet Wakelam is joining us from Australia. Harriet?
Morning.
Good morning. Now, yeah, it is very much morning there. Are you in Sydney or Melbourne today?
In Melbourne.
You're in Melbourne. In Melbourne. So it's 5:30 in the morning. So Harriet, she's a real trooper, as we say in Australia, for joining us at this very early stage. And she's made the transition from fintech to insurtech. So we're going to talk about that in a moment. But just before we do, I just had a couple more questions for you guys, John and Alexander. So, you know, with all this fintech stuff happening, and it's so hot right now, as Magumbo would say, so the question I have for you is, what's this doing to the employment picture? Are we seeing a brain drain? We're seeing people move across from traditional FIs into fintech? Who wants to tackle that first?
I think it's just a different types of it's the same crowd, but the crowd is a bit changing. Definitely, you will need less people to do the same job. The processes are more efficient. And obviously we're talking about fintech, but RegTech also is going to be big, possibly for the KYC space, for the AML, for the receivables, and this was a big subject, payable receivables in at Money 2020 in Copenhagen. So we're going to see less human and better processes and probably less errors also.
Yeah, so we've talked about that you know, previously, the possibility that you know, we could see 45% to 50% of the existing service or advisory jobs in banking disappear within the next 7 to 10 years as a result of AI and automation. So, John, you know, tell me, in terms of the you know, the Swiss Finance and Technology Association, you know, is there any sort of realistic discussion about how banks who have been very human focused in Switzerland are going to adapt to this?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the core reasons why we've had success being, we're less about startups and corporates, although that's part of what we do. We're really about bringing people together. And what you see is a lot of people from industry are asking, how does this affect me? And also something that's been really great to see is you have a lot of young people. We have some great universities around Switzerland, and young people are excited about the opportunities. They want to get into tech, and they see this as a great way to change a bit of a stale industry.
Yeah. So just one final question for you, John, and then I'm going to ask you one final question, Alexander. So, John, PSD2. What's going to happen with that in Switzerland? Because you guys aren't obliged to adopt it as European member, other European member nations, right?
Yeah, Switzerland is in the middle of Europe, but not a part of Europe. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a really interesting discussion. We hosted an event on it earlier this year. I basically got some very polite no thank yous from many of the bank's departments and the good folks at FINMA who are actually very open with us. Frankly, it's a conservative approach they're taking. They're assessing it and they're figuring out how they're going to be going along. It does seem like one of those themes, though, that when the rest of Europe and major markets are moving ahead, Switzerland oftentimes doesn't really have a choice. They have to figure out how they're going to piggyback and be involved in this sort of thing. You've seen it before with other regulations, and you'll see something happening here with PSD2 as well.
You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how blockchain suddenly sort of changes these conversations around things like this.
You already see it. I mean, in Switzerland, it's a blockchain hub. Companies like Ethereum, Monetax, both named to the top 100 just recently, or top 50 even, I believe. You know, it's a conversation in the middle of Switzerland, and you also have 6 payment services tied to the national exchange. So definitely a lot of conversations, even if we're a bit slower behind the regulations.
Yeah. And Alexander, you know, what's next for InvestGlass? And then the second part of the question, what makes Switzerland a good destination for a robo-advisor like you guys?
Sure. Well, today the product is very much a out-of-the-box white label robo-advisor. So let's take an independent financial advisor with 20 employees. They want to have their own robot. Within half a day, they can set up InvestGlass and start offering the whole investment proposal. So it's a very interesting SaaS solution. So we developed it in Switzerland, and we stayed in Switzerland because we are strong believers that, as you say, the human part and the storytelling and the values also of the Swiss banking will be core in the next generation of banking servicing. So now the future of InvestGlass is a strong presence in Europe, and we are looking for a first round of financing this year. So it's going to be very exciting.
How much are you raising?
And we will raise 2 million Swiss francs. We're going to start this process very soon, and this money will be used mostly to develop more artificial intelligence, and also to expand our operations in Asia. I have a little experience of China. I speak Mandarin, so it's a place I want to go back.
Ah, Mei Wan Ti. Great.
Yeah.
Cool. So listen, guys, John Haggart, president of Swiss Financial and Technology Association, Alexander Gaillard, thank you for joining us on Breaking Banks today. Alexander, where can we find out about InvestGlass? Is it just investglass.com?
Yes, investglass.com, on Twitter, on Vine also. I love Vine. And you have all the information. Thank you, Brett.
No problem. Thanks, John. Great. So, Harriet, welcome from down under. You know, this is a really global show today, and we've got Nicolas coming up in a minute. He's from Luxembourg, so this is a really global show today. New York, Australia, Santa Monica on the beach, Alex. Alex, I'm going to ask you about some health tech stuff in a moment. But before we get to you, Alex, Harry, let me ask you about the insure tech space. It's been a little bit slow to get started, the insurance companies. But do you see that ramping up right now?
I think there's no choice but for it to ramp up. I think that we sort of a little bit in the slipstream and potentially a little bit pushed by the fintech. I mean, effectively, isn't how people access things. Insurance has no.
Hey, we're having a bit of trouble hearing you, Harriet.
Sorry.
Yeah,
it's all that distance.
Yeah. It might be. It's the kangaroos haven't started jumping yet, or something. I don't know.
Well, we've got a little bit of a problem with slow internet here in Australia. It's one of the things that our new Prime Minister is trying to help us with. So we're trying to catch it rapidly. I think we're about half the speed of Korea at the moment. I think Australia crashed Netflix when it launched here.
Yeah. Look, I remember going to Sydney, and it was a hotel I stayed at near where they held the Olympics. It was not during the Olympics. It was just 2 years ago. I was doing an event down there. And I had to send a file, I remember. And it was so slow. It took like it was a 500 megabyte file. So it was big by Australian standards, not big by Korean standards in terms of data transfer. And it took 6 hours. And unbeknownst to me, at the hotel, if you went over a gig, they would charge you an extra day. Now, because of the loss rate with the internet connection, it kept trying to resend packets. And so to send the 500 meg file ended up being about a 3 gig transmission overall with upload and download. And I got charged like $60 for the day for using the internet in the hotel. And I was like, come on, this is like, I felt like it's just incredible. So Australia has some serious work to do on internet, but we're talking about insurtech. Don't distract me, Harry. Yeah. Don't distract me.
I think you've got this real need to actually connect infrastructure with services, with technology, because one of the health challenges and why it's so fascinating is you've got the very top layer of people who have no idea how to navigate health, and at the other end, a very massive system where the connection points are clunky and it's very difficult for people to access. And so I think, you know, the same way that it took you, you know, $60 to download a file, to ensure that we have insurance that helps people be healthy is really as much about connecting.
We lost you again, Harriet. So listen, while I'm trying to sort that out, Alex, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Brett.
Now you had dinner with Ban Ki-moon the other night, and
yes.
Yeah, should we talk about that?
We can, but I don't know if people will be too happy with my impressions. I was deeply disappointed, and I'd heard rumors of why he had the job, and My assessment of it is that he got the job because he's more willing to sing the praises of America than any American would be willing to, because it wouldn't be believable. Yeah. In his world, LA is perfect, our mayor is perfect, California is perfect, our governor is perfect, and the United States is perfect and is the main source of all benevolence that goes around the world. And really, if we could just magically reduce temperatures and we could just resettle those refugees, preferably in the United States, then all the world's problems would be solved. And it's just not realistic. If someone can't criticize the United States, even a little bit, can't even cock an eyebrow Spock-like, how are they going to solve problems that the United States is at the core of? Yeah. I mean, we have troops in 135 countries, special forces, and 1,000 military bases, and it's our footprints that's causing a lot of refugees.
I knew I shouldn't have got into this.
You asked.
I know I did. It was my fault. So let's talk about health tech, dude. So for those of you that don't know, Alex is one of the leading thinkers in terms of new technology. He was involved in the government initiative here for the launch of the IPv6, which was the expansion of internet addresses available for computers and other devices to connect to the internet backbone, and has also been involved in the standards around 4G and LTE, and wrote a fantastic book on the subject of the wired and wireless world called The Unwired World. Is that right, Alex?
Brave New Unwired World, the Brave Digital Big Bang and the world. Infinite Internet.
Yeah, but most recently, Alex and I have collaborated on the new book Augmented, which I'm sure you'll hear the ad for that during the break. But Alex wrote a chapter on health. We entitled the chapter in the end Health 2.0, and he talked about a range of different technologies and things that we're now only starting to really understand about our own health as a result of an explosion in technology. So, Alex, what do you think is the most significant technology developments that we've seen in respect to health tech in the last couple of years, or the most promising ones?
Well, the shrinking the size and cost of medical diagnostics, so that instead of just being in a hospital, they can be in outpatient clinics, and then from there going into the home, into the homes of biohackers. Though you have sort of uber biohackers like Dave Asprey, who has over $100,000 worth of gear in his barn. And so I think that
Dave is of course the author of The Bulletproof Diet and runs Bulletproof Coffee.
Right. So Dave is the archetype of the future, where people will find themselves in possession or with time sharing of gear that would normally be only in hospitals or very sophisticated sports facilities, and they're going to be measuring their blood, measuring ketones, and you can measure ketones through your breath, your blood, your urine, measuring blood glucose levels. I mean, I recently got over 200 different aspects of my health measured through my blood, and I was the first person to get this new super high resolution MRI, magnetic resonance image, at Stanford's research facility. So it's not just the hospital facility, but it's the research facility, and it was scanning my thymus. So if you have this whole convergence of Moore's law with medicine, where you have not only big data but visualization and different kinds of programs, including open source programs that can show you progress. So, for instance, there's a medical trial which I'm part of, and pretty much everybody in the trial is a transhumanist. You know, people who want to increase their lifespan, and it's all about regrowing the thymus and regrowing the immune system. The thymus is the critical path, so it's at its largest when we hit puberty, and from the time we hit puberty, we get all this testosterone. Testosterone shrinks it, and so does estrogen, so it shrinks by about 3% a year, and over our lifetime, it shrinks by 96%. So it goes from this
And that's responsible for the functioning of the immune system?
Yes, because you have the T cells, which are created in the bone marrow, but they're dumb. They're like dumb jocks. They go out and they could hurt anything. So the thymus is the master class in the finishing school, and
teaches the regulator.
The etiquette. You know, this is what you attack, this is what you defend. And your thymus, by the time that you're 50, is just this little hunk of fat, if you're like most people. But it's possible to regrow it. And so as part of the trial, I had everything scanned. And then they'll make a 3D image, a VR image of my thymus, my heart, and other organs, and then run a program, an open source program called Mango, on it, and determine the volume. And then there's a treatment protocol that goes for a year. And if it's successful, it will regrow my thymus to being the size Wow. that it was when I was a teenager. And that could extend my life by a third.
That's incredible. All right. So, hey, listen, Harriet, you're back on, I understand.
Yep, I'm here.
We've used Tech 1.0, the telephone.
Yeah, that's a nice fallback to mechanics.
Yeah, so let me ask you this then. Do you consider InsurTech a subset of FinTech, or what's the relationship between the two? I know we're sort of flipping here from the health tech stuff. We're going to get back to that, but how do these all relate?
I think they're the same. Like, I think you've got a system which helps people to do things that they find hard and access systems they find difficult, and to do those to change their lives. And effectively, whether that's health or wealth, I think they're very similar. So what we're learning is, you know, payments are a huge part of insurance as well as a huge part of money. And so helping people find easier, simpler ways to manage their finances. We look at things like PFS, and then you look at that in relation to insurance. They're completely connected. It's about gaining visibility into what is this thing that you bought, which has no end product, but you can't see, you can't touch, and you don't need until it's crisis time often.
Yep. No, it's very interesting, but it's all, you know, what I want to do is I want to talk about these advances in diagnostics and, you know, data, and sort of, I want to talk about how that might affect the insurance space, but can we just have a quick break before we do that? And I know you're calling in from Oz, so we'll try and make this quick, but let's have a quick break, and Alex, you can stick around, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. All right, so let's just have a quick break, and then after the break, we'll wrap that up. And then also we have Nicola is going to join us from Luxembourg. So you're with Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after these brief messages from our sponsors. Hi, it's Brett King here. I wanted to reach out to you personally to let you know about my new book, Augmented Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out the first week of May. I'm so excited about this book. It's going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, through your local bookstore. But this book has taken 2 years of my life. Thousands of hours of research have gone behind it. We've got some amazing contributions from the likes of Alex Lightman, Andy Lark from Xero, JP Rangaswamy from Deutsche Bank and Salesforce. We have interviews with Ramez Naam, an award-winning sci-fi author, roboticist Elliot Mack, Dr. Giovanni Santostasi on The Activated Self, Dr. Hugh Herr from MIT, Brad Templeton on The Google Self-Driving Car. Listen, if you enjoyed my podcast, you're excited about the future and the opportunities it presents, then Augmented is going to be a book you're really going to enjoy. Robert Scoble, the West Coast commentator on technology, he said, "We're in the midst of a huge wave of technological change, augmented reality, self-driving cars, human-like robots. Brett King not just properly catalogues all of these things, but he tells us what it all means, that soon we will be augmented. His look at what's happening will be my Bible for a long time." Check out augmentedbook.com or go to Amazon and pre-order it. I'd really appreciate your support.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Oh,
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, you are back with Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We are talking about lots of different tech today: health tech, fintech, insure tech, not just banks. But I will give you guys a quick shout out. If you want to participate in the conversation, don't forget you can always go to Twitter and use the hashtag Breaking Banks if you've got some questions for the guest, and we'll make sure they get them. And also, please do me a huge favor, do me a solid, and go to Amazon and type in Augmented Life in the Smart Lane or Augmented Brett King and pre-order the book. Alex and I would really appreciate it, wouldn't we, Alex?
Yes, absolutely. Plus, I'm pretty sure that the first print run is going to sell out, so people want to have a copy so they can follow the conversation we're having.
I think so. Yep, we're number one new release in biotechnology today. So we got our biotechnology expert on, Alex Lightman. So, Alex, there's been one of the big standouts in the last few years in terms of startups in this space was Theranos, who's a lab on a chip diagnostics desktop diagnostics unit that can analyze thousands of diseases, potentially conditions from a drop of blood, microfluidics. But there's been some controversy about this startup recently, hasn't there?
Well, I don't know that there's controversy. It's pretty much definitive that people looked into it from the FDA and found that the claims were not warranted. Theranos implied that it had its own proprietary technique. It would take less blood, and from that less blood, it would still have the same accuracy. And as it turned out, the FDA said, whoa, wait a minute, the diagnoses are not correct. They're not accurate. If you take blood from someone one day and you come up with a certain determination, and then you come take blood from that same person the next day and it says something different, you've got a serious problem, and you might have false positives or worse, misdiagnose things. And as I did a talk on VR medicine on Saturday, and the primary motivation for doing this is that there are 12 million misdiagnoses in the United States each year, leading to 98,000 casualties, people killed through medical misdiagnosis. And so to have a company so high profile that was potentially spewing misdiagnosis through every drugstore would have been an absolute medical disaster for the United States.
So do you think they'll come back from this?
I don't see how they come back for this in any way, shape, or form like they were. And I also have to say that having Henry Kissinger and all these other George Shultz and all this kind of political dead weight on their board with one doctor, it just looked like it was a giant scam to gather people's blood for some nefarious purpose. It made no medical sense. There was no medical logic, and they never explained it. And there was way too much hype around, somebody.
There was hype.
She's the next Steve Jobs, and she was wearing the black turtlenecks to emulate him. It all seemed so crafted to fool people. It was a giant scam.
All right. Well, so but lab on a chip diagnostics is still a very, very,
they never,
very promising
field. I don't know why you're saying they have lab on a chip, because that was never even their claim. That's not even in their literature. Right. They just claimed that they could use small amounts to diagnose.
So microfluidics. They're talking more about microfluidics, but
it's small sample size. Microfluidics is what you do after you take the sample. They never made any. They didn't tell you what they did after they took the sample. They just said you can give us a much smaller sample. So as an example, I went into Quest for this Stanford trial, and they took 9 big vials of blood. And then I went to Stanford and they took, you know, another 9 big vials of blood for me. I mean, it's a lot of blood. And Theranos is saying, oh, just give us a few drops of it and we'll tell you everything they could tell you. Well, it was just simply false.
But we are
is useful because it can bring this into the home. You actually could make diagnostics so that you at home can do experiments and do biohacking and say, okay, so I'm doing this exercise program or I'm eating garlic or I'm trying these supplements. Which of my indicators of health are improving and which ones are getting worse? You know, am I improving my LDL cholesterol? Am I improving my HDL cholesterol? And that ability to get real-time biochemical data to change your program is revolutionary. And I have friends. I was the first outside investor to invest in Natural Machines, which is a leader in 3D food printing. And so they can take your diagnostics and they can recommend the exact meal with the exact number of calories and grams of protein, grams of carbs, grams of fat that will meet your criteria. And that ability to put your diet, supplements, exercise all into a virtuous cycle of real-time readings without involving hospitals or diagnostic clinics is revolutionary.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So let me just ask you this, Harriet. You know, with all this data available, you know, how's this going to impact, you know, and people hacking their own diets and doing all the stuff that Alex was talking about, how's this going to change the way, you know, this feeds into the insurance sector?
In Australia, we've got a really interesting situation because Australian health insurance is not risk-rated, meaning that if you share data for experimentation, it can't change your policy. So we've got actually a really interesting experimental environment here. So people are potentially less frightened to share data. But I think what we're seeing is this emerging sense of power. People are genuinely quite frightened because what do you do with this data? Your Fitbit tells you that you've got, you know, your heart's not working as well. What are you actually supposed to do? So for insurance companies, the role is as much now about risk providing as also finding pathways for people to manage that.
Do the insurance providers become the trusted partner that knows what to do with the data?
Well, I mean, we know how well that's working for banks. I think that in some ways that's the aspiration. I think there's a need, and this is where InsurTech is really fascinating, is what is a partner for health? Because right now, if you look at how Slack revolutionized communication, it did it through looking at ad hoc pathways of communication. In the same way, insurance has to look at the current ad hoc pathways people have for looking at health risk. Do you actually know what your health risk is? And then how do you buy and service products that are right now, and you know, if you look at the blood example, your blood can change on a weekly, monthly basis.
Sure.
What does that mean to the level of insurance you need? How do you build a relationship with a health service that will be there for you when you need it, when actually health is even more unpredictable than money? And I think those are some of the big questions.
Wow. So sure, I like that. That's a really good soundbite. Health is even more unpredictable than money. So hey, listen, Alex and Harriet, I'm going to have to ask you guys to wrap up here because I've got Nicola on from Luxembourg. But can you guys stick around? What we might do is just record a small piece that we can put up on the site, an extended interview. Okay.
Sure.
All right. So, Nicola, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Brett.
Hey, tell us about FinTech in Luxembourg and the Luxembourg Hub.
Well, FinTech in Luxembourg comes from the fact that we have in Luxembourg quite a big financial industry, not making too much noise as maybe other financial centers are, but with a flagship industry around investment funds and in particular administration thereof, and then also a large wealth management industry, capital markets operations. Obviously, over the course of the last couple of years, an increasing need for fintech solutions arose also in Luxembourg. And so all the players in Luxembourg are looking around for solutions that are offered by new players, disruptive players, to make their services more efficient, cheaper, and what have you.
Now,
the government also pays quite a lot of attention to it. You spoke before with John about government support. We are in the fortunate situation of having a finance minister who made this his very personal priority.
Well, that's good, right?
It's very good.
So it's interesting, even like, you know, I would think of Luxembourg probably more like the Swiss in terms of the way it's regulated, but it sounds like, you know, Luxembourg is doing it on their own, doing it quite differently, right?
Well, there's a fundamental difference. Luxembourg is part of the European Union, so we apply the EU regulatory framework, and that is what actually makes Luxembourg. We serve as a hub in the European Union. We spoke before about the SIX Payments Group. They are obviously very big in Switzerland, but they use Luxembourg as their presence in the European Union. The same goes for Amazon. The same goes for PayPal in the payments areas. Rakuten as well, they chose Luxembourg as their hub in the European Union. We see a lot of players from other European countries coming to Luxembourg. Why? Because it's simply a very business-friendly place to cover various European markets at the same time.
Yeah, I would be remiss not to ask you, what happens if there's a Brexit?
We're all in trouble. That's the very short answer. The long answer is that Europe will be weaker and financial institutions will have to look for alternatives. Don't make me say now what I'm not going to say.
No. I mean, look, I can't figure out how it can possibly happen. You know, everyone except Boris Johnson, you know, sort of seems to be against it. So, I wish that were true
because we really, we certainly wouldn't want that because, as I said, Europe would end up much weaker, and we are Europeans, fundamentally Europeans, and so we need the UK in the single market.
So tell me, what's the hottest fintech in Luxembourg?
There's a couple. I mean, we have quite a, as I mentioned before, payments. We have DigiCash, which is a homegrown startup, very active in the retail mobile payment.
We've had them on. Yeah, we've had them on.
You did. Very good. Yeah. Very good. I missed that part. Virtual currencies, Bitcoin exchanges or wallets. I know that that is not what you guys mostly believe in, but still.
Oh, yeah. No, we're a fan of Bitcoins. We had Brock Pierce, the chairman of the Bitcoin Foundation, on a few weeks back.
Former chairman.
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, so now we had Brock, who's replaced him, Brock Pierce on. So, okay. So, where can we find out about Luxembourg Finance?
Luxembourgforfinance.com. That's our website. You will find every information about us on that website. Every information about Luxembourg. Also about you will find links to the Investment Fund Industries Association, the Bankers Association, the Insurers Association, and everything they do in the fintech space. I can only invite you to go and click on it. Or
we will. And we'll send out
to Luxembourg. You're most
welcome. Yeah, I should. Well, you guys can invite me.
We certainly will.
Nicola Macal, Finance for Luxembourg. Thank you very much. We'll tweet that out. Sorry we ran out of time today, Nicola.
That's
I would have
very
liked
fine.
To talk to you more about Luxembourg.
It
but
was
thanks
a very,
for that
very interesting show.
Update.
So
yeah, thank
it was
you.
Worthwhile. Thank you, Brent.
And thanks for everybody. Harriet and Alex, stay on. We'll get you guys to do an extended piece. That's the show for today. Breaking Banks, thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, for more of the latest in fintech news.